So we continue our study of Sefer Melachim Aleph, and we are up to the end of Perek Zayin, Pasuk Mem, which is really a totaling, at least initially, of the copper, all of the copper materials that this Hiram, who Shlomo had drafted into his service. So we kind of hear a totaling. You know, some, at least the Art Scroll edition, has on the side, it lets you know where in the Tanakh psukim are used as haftorahs. So right on the side, it lets us know that for Ashkenazim, this is the haftorah for Parshas Vayakel. For Svaradim, it's for Parshas Pekudei. And it's also the haftorah of the second Shabbos of Chanukah. So both, let's just look at the Ashkenazic perspective, because that's what most of us are more used to. So Parshas Vayakel, again, is counting up the totals of the Mishkan's construction. So Chazal, we're looking for a section of Navi that kind of has a totaling and an accounting. That would work out. Shabbos, you know, the second Shabbos of Chanukah, so, you know, there's always one Shabbos of Chanukah. Every once in a while, there are two. So where are you going to find, right, the Torah reading on Chanukah has nothing to do with the actual miracle of Chanukah. It's impossible. There's no Bible then. So we go back, we read the portion in Parshas Naso of the Nisim when they brought their karbanos when the Mizbeach was set up. So, Mizbeach was set up, they rededicated the Mishkan, Mizbeach, the Beis HaMikdash, so it all kind of works out. But with Haf Torah, we're trying to get something temple related. So again, Chanukah is a rededication of temple too. There's no Navi during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. And so they went to here, they went to these Pesukim about Shlomo, finishing the construction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So we're picking up Pasuk Mem, and hopefully these are the, you know, for the those of us who are getting, myself included, a little lost in the details, this is the last of that, and then we move into the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash and the Tfilos and the Brachos, so we'll see that very shortly. So a Pasuk Mem, Vayas Chirom made, he actually made, Esa Ki Yoros, the Ki Yoros, are translated by Rashi and by the Mesudas Tzion as not the word kior that we were translating previously, but they translate it to mean a sira, which is a pot. Because at this point, when you read the whole pasuk, it kind of sounds like it's a listing of more tools and instruments rather than something big, something large. Ve'asa ya'im. Ya'im were shovels. Ve'asa mizrakos. The mizrakos are bowls. The Mitzvah Tzion already tells us the source, the shorish of the word Mizrak is the word Zorik. Zorik means to throw or to sprinkle. The blood, a part of the service of a karban, the blood needed to be sprinkled on Mizbeach. So it was from sometimes it involved the Kohen sticking his finger into the blood. Other times it actually was using the bowl and kind of throwing the blood onto the Mizbeach. And that's where these bowls got their names, Mizrakos. Vayichal Chiram la'asosas kol ha'malacha. Chiram finished all of the work. Asher asal melech Shlomo beis Hashem, that he was responsible for doing for Shlomo in terms of the construction of the beis Hashem. And now we kind of hear a list. You may have expected the pasuk to be divided into two, because the word vayichal that he finished, it maybe should have been kind of a standalone pasuk, because now we're starting like a laundry list. I don't know why it's included in the same pasuk. So pasuk mem aleph. So here's the list. The amudim shnayim, there were the two pillars, right? The yachan and the voas, those two copper pillars. The gulos hakosaros asharosh amudim shtayim, and the two large crowns, kind of rounded crowns, what we call the capital of the pillar, that was on top of the two pillars. Vasfacho shtayim, the two elaborate netting work that was on each one, lachasosa shnei gulos akosaros, that covered the two pillar, the two capitals of the pillars, asher rosh amadim, that was on top. Pasuk mem beis, vesarimonim arba meos l'shtei asvachos. There was the 400 pomegranate shapes, 200 for each of the pillars. Shnei turim yironim l'svachas, two columns of pomegranate shapes on one of the copper nettings, again on the crown, on the capital of the pillar, lachasosa shtei agulos akosoros, to cover the crown, ashal pnei avudim, which is on the pillars. Pasuk mem gimel, Ves ha mechonos aser. Mechonos were the stands that we talked about, the elaborate holders of the kior. Ves ha kioros asara. And here are the actual extra wash basins. In addition to the yam, in addition to that large water container, if that's not even the best word, in addition to that, they were actually kiors, they were actual basins. Ala mechonos, they were set up on these stands. Pasuk mem dalet ves hayam ha'achad, that one large yam. Va'bakar shnei masar tachas hayam, and the 12 copper shapes of oxen that were underneath supporting, that was the support of this of the yam. Pasuk mem hey. Ves asiros ves hayam ves amizrakos. So the various pots and shovels and bowls. Ves kol ha'kelim ha'ele. All of these kelim, asher asa chiram lemelech Shlomo beis Hashem, that chiram made for the king Shlomo for the house of Hashem, nechoshes memorat. It was copper memorat. I'm curious. You have a different translation.
Bright.
Bright. Okay. So the Mitzudos Tzion defines the word memorat tzacha ubehira, pure and bright. So that's why I think we have the Art Scroll translates it as pure. Your translation says bright. It's used in other places in Tanakh. It meant very high quality copper. The Radak makes a note of the kriuk siv that's in the pasuk. The fact that every once in a while we have a word that is written in the, let's say, the handwritten text of our shul only has the practice of laning the Megillos. The five Megillos we lane from a cloth, from a handwritten scroll. There are some shuls, my nephew just celebrated his bar mitzvah a couple weeks ago in New Jersey, and his shul for the Haftorah, every Haftorah is read out of a scroll, which makes it a lot harder for the bar mitzvah boy. Probably also makes it that, you know, whoever reads it actually knows, you know, you have to actually prepare as opposed to just, you know, yeah, just winging it with the dots. There are no dots, there's no cantillation notes. So every once in a while, there's a way that something is written and the way that it is read. As part of the Torah Shebaal Peh, there's a difference. So if you look at the way that it is written, it is written ha-ohel, hey aleph, hey lamed. But the way that the kri, the way that we pronounce it is we switch the lamed, the end lamed and hey, so we read it as ha-ela. So the Radak says that there's an allusion, again, an additional level of interpretation provided through this aspect of Tarshav Peh. What's ha-ohel? The ohel refers to the tent, that's the ohel moed. That some of these, even, you know, kind of we, in this pasuk, we're reading about more of the minor aspects of the Beis HaMikdash, whether you're talking about a shovel, a bowl. These are the, again, when you're thinking about the grandeur of the Beis HaMikdash, when you imagine if a kid had some project where they have to pick one vessel from the Beis HaMikdash to research and draw. And so who's going to pick the bowl? Like, hey, kids are going to want the menorah and the aron and the shulchan. You know, maybe you'll have some wise guy who'll, you know, want the kiyah. I don't know. So who's going to ask for a bowl? So what Shlomo and Hiram were trying to do is they tried in the Beis HaMikdash, which is this new house of Hashem, they tried as much as possible to pattern that which Moshe Rabbeinu did in the base, in the Mishkan, that those types of vessels, perhaps maybe they need more, maybe they needed more of them now, just in terms of what was going to be in the fully functional Beis HaMikdash versus the Mishkan. So they tried to pattern it after what was, kind of, you know, I imagine in the world of architecture, sometimes it might be a new age, but you still try to bring in the old style. So it was new, but in the style of the old. Pasuk Mem Vav. Where did this all take place? Where was the copper? So the place to get copper was in the Jordan Valley, because we hear in Pasuk Mem Vav, this all took place, the working of the pure copper. B'kikar ha-yardein yitzakam ha-melech b'ma'avei ha-dama. It was in the plain of the Jordan. That's where the copper was poured or cast into the ground, into these b'ma'avei ha'dama, in the thickness of the ground. That's where they made the molds. And it almost makes it sound like Shlomo HaMelech was doing it, which is a little bit strange because he's the king and he appointed this Hiram. So some of the Mepharshim believe that maybe he was just he took a little bit extra oversight of this aspect of the project, and so he was present. And it was located between two places, again in the Jordan, in the plain of the Jordan, Bein Sukkos and Bein Tzartan, between one place called Sukkos, one place called Tzartan. Pasuk Mem Zayin. Vayanach Shlomo as kol hakelim meirov ma'od ma'od. Shlomo set aside, he almost, when he was taken in the accounting or when they were all completed, but there were so many of the copper vessels, lo nechkar mishkal anachoshes, the quantity was so much, they couldn't figure out how much it all weighed. So it's just a lot of copper. Okay. Pasuk Memchas. Vayash Shlomo es kol hakelim asher beis Hashem. Shlomo made all of the vessels that were part of or in or for the Beis Hashem. And here we talk about the official kelim, the big kelim. Es mizbeach hazahav, the golden mizbeach, the golden altar. Yes, hashulchan and the shulchan. Asher olav lechem aponim, that upon which was lechem aponim, the showbread, zahav was gold. So first, this is not the first time that we mentioned the Mizbeach HaZav. We earlier mentioned the Mizbeach HaZav, and we kind of saw an approach, sounds like the consensus approach, it was the same Mizbeach HaZav, a golden altar that the Ketores, that the incense was offered on. It was the same Mizbeach HaZav that Moshe and Bezalel built in the desert, but again, I didn't fully understand it, I still don't. They made it bigger. They made the dimensions of it bigger. Again, how you take a rectangular shape, 3D rectangular shape, and make that bigger you have to add material, so some type of enhancement of the Mizbeach HaZav. The Shulchan, it sounds like they're only one. When you take a look at the Psukim in Divrei Hayamim, so the Shulchan echoes the next pasuk. The next pasuk, if you're not familiar, I'm going to give it away. It's going to list the amount of menorahs, the amount of candelabras that it were, and it talks about 10 candelabras. That Moshe Rabbeinu was told to build one. Shlomo, through the nevuah that was given to David, was told to build 10 extra ones. And for whatever reason, I don't have a good answer for you, in Divrei Hayamim, that same idea of having 10 extra ones is expressed about the Shulchan. And so that in Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, there were 11 menorahs and there were 11 shulchans. And so what it existed, and Rashi is very clear in terms of his presentation of the next pasuk, and we imagine it mimics. So the when you walked into the holy, when you walk into the actual temple part of it, right? So you're walking from east to west, right? The back, where the Aron is at the west side, which is why, you know, we gather at the western walls, because that's the closest place where you could get to the top of the mountain where the Beis HaMikdash was and where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was. If you were on the east side, you'd be actually outside the walls of the old city. There's like, I think, a highway there. But you're first of all, practically, there's no place to stand over there. But I don't know if that ever played a role in it. But that our tradition is that the western wall is the western wall. It's the western wall of the mountain, and we've gone over numerous times. So on top was the closest, and that's why there's a place, if you take certain tours into the old city, they refer to something as the Kotel HaKatan. I don't know if you've ever been there. So what's the Kotel HaKatan? It's the same wall, and it's by no means, if you would remove all the buildings, there's nothing katan about the wall. The wall is huge, and we don't even see the full height of it. They say the Kotel HaKatan is the part of the supporting wall of the mountain, which is directly where the Kodesh HaKadoshim would have been had the Beis HaMikdash been built on top of the mountain. You're just standing below the mountain. There was one, I had one Kabbalah Shabbos where we were escorted by armed guards, and we davened Kabbalah Shabbos by this small Kotel HaKatan. It's in the Arab Quarter, and it's just further north. Right, when you're standing at the Kotel, you're very, very close to the southern wall, which is why they have the southern wall excavations, which are beautiful and extremely fascinating. And I'm sure in the 11 years that I've unfortunately not been there, it's probably even more amazing and more fascinating. So So if you keep going north towards the northern wall, at some point you're kind of where they think the center of the Beis HaMikdash would have been. Mm-hmm. When you walk into the Holy of Holies, when you walk into the Holy, so you're walking east to west. So there's a south side, and there's a north side, and there's a center. In the center, or what's more towards the west, that's where the Mizbeach HaZahav was. Then on the southern side was the menorah, and on the north side was the Shulchan. So yeah, and that's why the Gemara tells us that, I'm going to paraphrase, Harotza Sheyachkim Yadrim. If you wanted to become smart, you should daven facing the south, because the menorah was on the south side. And Harotza, like Lahashir, that you want to become rich, you should daven towards the north, because that's where the Shulchan was, which represents physical sustenance. And if you come here, either in this room or in that room on Hanukkah, when we light a menorah in the shul, the practice is we always light in a shul. It doesn't officially count as a lighting. If you happen to be the one to light in the shul, when you go home, it's not like you're, you know, exempt. Mm-hmm. Not like Havdalah, right? Havdalah, if you're the one who makes Havdalah in the shul, you can't make Havdalah when you're at home. That's why there's only, right? What's the rule? When does the rabbi make Havdalah? When the Rebbetzin's here. Or when she's out of town.
Oh, really?
Because if she's in the room, he makes Havdalah. He makes Havdalah because then it's Havdalah. If she's away, he makes Havdalah. If not, he asks a high school kid, because if another man makes it and he goes home, then he can't make Havdalah again. So that's a real mitzvah.
I was just going to say that, because you can.
The answer is, if there's no one available, you can.
I think you can even make it for
better,
a cousin.
Better than any of the other inventions that have been done.
Like calling somebody on the phone.
Like that one, is that the person should make it themselves. So the menorah, though, that we light in shul is just to remember that there was a menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So in order to, I don't know if it's in order to enhance it, but part of that practice is we go ahead and we put the menorah on the southern wall or the southern side of the shul. So you have to be good with your directions and know which way, right? We usually have a pretty good picture of which way is east, unless you're downstairs on the high holidays, okay? But whatever, other considerations.
Why they dive in the wrong direction?
Yeah.
What are they dive towards this way?
Towards this way, right? I think.
Something like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Whatever. I guess we want to become smart. We want to face the menorah. I think it's just the shape of the room. So you have this menorah set up on the south. So what basically happened is that they set up kind of one in the center. The one that Moshe Rabbeinu built was in the center. And then they would be kind of adorning it on each side, five and five. The 10 that Shlomo built. When it comes to the Shulchan, which we're talking about right now, so there's a little bit of discrepancy. Was there Lechem HaPanim on all of them? So was the Lechem HaPanim, instead of being 12, was it really... It doesn't make sense to necessarily say that there was... So maybe they just shifted. They used one, a different one each time. Maybe only the one that Moshe Rabbeinu built had the Lechem HaPanim. And you're forced, you're kind of boxed in to say that this had to be Alpi Nevuah. This had to be with some level of prophecy. Because there are two psukim in the Torah that tell us that we're not allowed to take away from mitzvahs and we're not allowed to add to mitzvahs. So right, one is called Bal Tosif, can't add, and one is called Bal Tigra. So let's say you like this idea of having mezuzah, so you think it really protects you. So you know what? Let's have two mezuzahs on a doorway. Forget about the price. Let's say your son became a sofer, so you have unlimited supply of mezuzahs. Let's have two mezuzahs. So there were actually times that this question was even asked. Let's say a person was nervous if the mezuzah was going to be taken. Should they maybe leave one mezuzah outside, and maybe they wanted to put another mezuzah on the inside of the door to make sure that... But you have this concern of adding mezuzahs. So Bal Tosif is a concern. So on the one hand, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to make one menorah. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to make one shulchan. Are you allowed to have more than that? Is that a problem of Bal Tosif? So if we've been going with this approach the whole time, that Shlomo didn't innovate things. He did it al pi Navi. And it could be that this wasn't, we're kind of scratching the surface on a greater issue. A Navi, besides Moshe Rabbeinu, is not allowed to change any of the mitzvos of the Torah. One of the principles of faith that we have, one of the Rambam's Ikarim, is that the Torah that we have is unchangeable. You're not allowed to change. So no other prophet can come along later and say, you know what, instead of doing Shabbos this way, really, instead of 39 malachas, really, there are only 38, or there are 40. Either of those would be problematic for a Navi to do. A Navi is allowed to do something temporary. Another Navi could come and say, you know what, there's some crazy epidemic going on, and so don't keep Shabbos one time. A Navi could do that, and if he was a real Navi, checked out everything, or she was a real Navi and checked out everything, so then we'd have to listen, and you could violate the Torah on a short time to listen to a Navi. It's called Hara Asha. It's like a temporary edict. But to change, if they came along and say, you know, there's just no more, Shabbos just doesn't exist anymore, Shabbos moved to Sunday, that you can't listen to at all. So how do you square away even a Navi coming in? So maybe you have to say an idea that they weren't saying, these are extra. I don't remember if these were in the second Beis HaMikdash, how many of these they had. If you look at, and sometimes when you, like some of the pictures you brought up online, a lot of them come, I think a lot of the pictures, definitely ones that look newer, come from an organization in Yerushalayim called Machon HaMikdash. This is the Temple Institute, where they're busy actually building. They finished, I think, everything that they can. They're basically building as much as possible. They're getting ready for the Beis HaMikdash to go. They figured out what all the incense are, all the spices. They've made clothing for Kohanim and for the Kohen Gadol. They've built things to like really get ready. It's debatable, but they have phenomenal pictures that they've produced. So you can see some of the pictures that they have actually have 10 or 11 shulchans and 11 menorahs, meaning they're tapping into these psukim of Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash. Offhand, I don't remember if those were present in the second Beis HaMikdash. So one of the ways you could possibly square this away says, yes, it was a Navi who said to do this, but it wasn't saying that the commandment that Moshe was given is the wrong commandment or is changed for temporary, let's say for the first Beis HaMikdash. I mean, temporary is 400 years, but it's still being done as an enhancement, and therefore it's perhaps not a problem of Baal Tosef. I imagine you have to give some explanation why it's not a problem.
And they were all the same size, like all real big.
Presumably, all real, all big, all gold. Right. Now, you know, why was the Mizbeach HaZahav not duplicated? Why only the... So we could all make an argument why the Aron wouldn't be duplicated. The Aron is like super special. It's in its own place. But if the Kodesh is adorned by three items, so why is there 10 menorah, 11 menorahs, 11 shulchans, but only one Mizbeach HaZahav? Maybe... And there's only one Mizbeach HaChitzon. There was only one Mizbeach for all the animals.
Make it quicker, right?
We're coming to the holiday of Shavuos.
Right.
So holiday of Shavuos is everyone coming had to bring three karbanos on Shavuos, just like the three karbanos on Pesach and on Sukkot. On Pesach and Sukkot, you have a whole week. How are you going to bring all those karbanos in one day?
Right.
Shavuos is only one day, right? Not 2 days. One day. And you have to stay up all night, you have to eat cheesecake, you have to read Rus, you have to do all this in one day. How are you going to bring 3 million karbanos? So you can't. So already in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they made a takana, the rabbis of that time enacted, that you had a bonus 6 days. You had a bonus 6 days to bring your karbanos. They called it Yemei Tashlumin just because the math couldn't be done.
After.
And that's why, to recall that, so we, in our shacharis and our mincha, we don't recite tachanun for the 6 days after, because it was like holiday days. A little bit. Definitely for the individuals who were bringing the sacrifices, it was clearly very, very joyous. And you weren't able to leave town until you brought your karbanos.
So did people go for the actual day of Shavuos and
stay? I imagine.
Or could they go later?
Oh, that's a good question.
You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Miss the traffic. Memorial Day this weekend, it was crazy on Friday.
No, it's a good question. Like, if you did, you have to be there. I don't know how how it works in terms of obligation. Definitely, what's clear is let's say a boy became bar mitzvah the day after Shavuos. So even though it's he wouldn't have to bring those karbanos.
Right.
Because he was never obligated. Because he was never obligated.
Right.
At the time, as you know, so where that question gets complicated is Chol Moed Sukkos and how you view Shmini Atzeres. Do you view Shmini Atzeres as such a standalone holiday that it obligates these karbanos again? So that if let's say a boy became bar mitzvah in the middle of Chol Moed Sukkos, so now would it change? Would Shmini Atzeres change things or not? Well, that's getting into like definitely a good topic. But getting back to your point, I mean, having multiple mizbechos would have been helpful, right? It's more place to burn karbanot. So again, clear. We keep going back to the design, and maybe you know the mizbech. The same way that there was going to be one mizbech on the outside, there had to be one mizbech on the inside. But that maybe perhaps there's further research that we could do. So pasuk mem tes, v'yas ha-minoros. So here there's no hinting, and it's only in Divrei Yamim. Here it's very clear. There are minoros. There are plural menorahs, multiple candelabras. Chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismol. Five to the right and five to the left. Lifnei ha-dvir, in front of the dvir. The dvir here is referring to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Five to the right, five to the left, as Rashi depicts that they were on, right? All of the menorahs are on the southern side of the room. There's going to be one kind of centered, and that's the menorah that was built by Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert. And then it's adorned by Chamesh Miyamin, Chamesh Mismal, five lined up on the right, five lined up on the left. Zahav Sagur, these menorahs were made out of Zahav Sagur. That was the similar type of gold that we saw that was used inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Zahav Sagur, we translated it as fine gold. We saw the explanation was Sagur means closed. It meant that the kind of gold that if someone's selling, everybody else closes up their shop because no one's going to be interested in their gold if any of this gold is available. The haperach, the flowers, the haneros, and the actual lamps. The melkachayim, were the tongs to remove the wicks. They had to remove the wicks. Zahav, all of that was made out of gold. And the Mefarshim tell us that the menorahs were as much of a copy of the original menorah as possible. If you recall from Parshas Truma, Rashi cites the Medrash that the menorah was rather challenging. It was because it was supposed to be miksha achas. It was supposed to be one solid. It was not supposed to be pieces of gold put together like most of our candelabras are. But it was supposed to be one solid piece, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know how to make it, didn't know how to understand it. So the Medrash says he took basically this table size gold all the way, just a block, threw it into the fire, and out came a menorah. Whether some type of miraculous activity was involved in creating these, or these were just, you know, as much as a possible replicas, we don't necessarily know. But the menorahs in the Beis HaMikdash were seven candles. With one in the middle, and so and three branches on the side. There is a long-standing debate, how did the menorah look? So most of us were just biased by whatever picture book we had when we learned it the first time. So Rashi's approach was that they were curved, but whenever you see any of the Chabad menorahs, what's the shape of the Chabad menorah? Like a V.
Right.
The Hanukkah menorah. So the Why? Just because it's easier to put on top of the car? So that was the Rambam's approach. The Rambam's approach is that the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was a V.
Rambam,
Maimonides. Chabad is very, very much focused on the writings of the Rambam. They even have the same way, you know, there's a popular Daf Yomi program. So amongst Chabad Hasidim, there's a Rambam program. Where either, I think it's one perek a day, you finish all of the Rambam's Mishnah Torah in 3 years, and if you learn it by the math, this is a hard one, if you learn three prakim a day, then you finish it in 1 year. But that, you know, it's a very hard thing to do, because yes, there are fascinating passages in the Rambam, but to learn a straight entire chapter of, let's say, the laws of Shabbos, it's very dry, I was part of, when we were in yeshiva, so by Simchas Torah, it was just the first day, when we were in Israel, so the first day was with the Israelis. Second day was just Americans. So we developed a practice, how are you going to give out the honor? So here in America, not necessarily in the shul, although the atarisa is done for money, for many times the honors are done with money. So first of all, guys have no money. They shouldn't be spending their parents' money. So they auction things off for commitments and learning.
Oh, that's cute.
So how many pages of Gemara do you commit to learn? Then you could be the chassan Torah. How many? So we started getting creative. So one category, I don't remember what it was, was bid for how many chapters, how many prakim of Rambam would you commit to? And one of my friends committed to 80 chapters of Rambam. So what happened? Like a month or two afterwards, he realized what that means. So he got three of us together, and he did Hataras Nedarim to get rid of his vow because it was... Yeah, so he was just... he had to get rid of it. So the Rambam's approach is that the menorahs were shaped like a V, and so Chabad patterns themselves. So for Hanukkah, they make it, whatever, 8 candles, you know, so 4 sets going out with the shamash in the middle. The Beis HaMikdash had 3 going out and one near Ma'aravi, one candle in the middle. So these other menorahs were patterned. They were all, right, so if there were a total of 11 menorahs, there was a total of 77 candles. Pasuk Nun. Vahasipos. What are sipos? So the Mesidus Tzion translate them as kadim, jugs. What is your translation of? Bowls. So here there seems to be a little bit of discrepancy. The Radak takes the approach of a pitcher, but Rashi actually says, Rashi thought it was actually a clay shalmine zemer, some type of musical instrument. We know that there were musical, right? The Levium played musical instruments. So he thinks that this is that. Vaha mizamros. Mizamros, Rashi understands this is another type of, right, zemer. This is another type of musical instrument. And others say, no, this is the only category of musical instruments. Right? The Mesidus Tzion defines it as clay zemer, which makes sense. Vaha mizrakos. Mizrakos were more of the bowls. Vahakapos, a spoon. Vahamachtos, a machta is a pan. Zahav sagur, all of these things were made out of very fine gold. Vahaposos, what are the posos? So here we also have a machlokas. The Mitzvah Tzion defines it as like door hinges, while Rashi defines it as machtechos, keys. That there were doors in the Beis HaMikdash and there were keys. The Gemara has this, technically horrific but poetic image of when the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed of the Kohanim and the Levium like taking their keys and kind of throwing it back up to, you know, to Hashem, saying like, you know, like here are the key, like we've done our job and like here's what you have. So the keys. Right, so vahaposos ladalsos. Either was the hinges for the doors, or as Rashi says, the keys to the doors. Habayis apnimi of the inner sanctum. Lekodesh hakdashim to the kodesh hakdashim. Ladalse habayis the doors of. That's where we learned about the sets of doors. Lahechal for the hechal, all made of gold.
So all the doors had locks and keys.
They had locks and keys, and depend. Right, some of the doors always stayed open, and some doors closed. Pasuk Nun Aleph. Vatishlam kol hamelacha asher asa hamelach Shlomo beis Hashem. So all of the work was completed. It was when all the work was completed that Shlomo went ahead and did. Vayave Shlomo es kadshei David aviv. Shlomo brought all of the holy things of David his father, es hakesef, es hazav, es hakelim, the silver, the gold, and the vessels. Nasan be'otzros be'es Hashem. He put them into the treasuries, into the storehouses of the Beis HaMikdash. We had already heard, we saw already that there was a lot of office space and storage space, right, in that the area, the building structure that was right outside the temple, the Yitziah. So there was definitely a lot of space. So what's Shlomo putting there? So Rashi is very elaborate. And Rashi tells us, first explains it very simply, that David, right, we already mentioned the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, David had done everything that he could to get the Beis HaMikdash ready, including saving up money, gold, silver, basically doing everything that he possibly could. So Rashi's first approach is very simply, basically David did an amazing job, and he collected too much. And so Shlomo Melech used everything that David had given him, but there was leftover. So what do you do with the leftover? He put it in the treasury. He put it in the storehouse, you know, rainy day fund. Then Rashi quotes Midrashim. Two Midrashim. No, sorry, one Midrash. Rashi says, Shalo Ratza Shlomo, he didn't want to use any of the things, any of the materials that David saved, he didn't want to use. Sounds odd, because it was his father's dream. So Rashi, very interestingly, it's if you have the Rashi, you could try to see it. Rashi on Pasuk Nun Aleph, Rashi says, "Vishamati mechachme Yisrael." I've heard from the wise in Israel, but we don't know who that is. We don't know who's Rashi referring to. Shai Omer, that they say the following reason. Basically, Shlomo HaMelech knew the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. And he didn't want the idolaters who were going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash to say, look what happened. David conquered the areas around Israel. He conquered and he got this money from non-Jews. He got this money from Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Look who won in the end. It was the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. In this case, it was the Babylonians who came and they got back their stuff. Meaning, who won in the end? The Ovdei Avodah Zarah won. This money came from Ovdei Avodah Zarah and went back to Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So Shlomo didn't want that to be the catch line. And Rashi quotes a second approach that's a little stinging to read, that Shlomo said to himself that there were three, in the final years of his father being king, which we saw, some of us saw in Sefer Shmuel, there was a famine that was there for 3 years. And Shlomo felt that his father should have used the funds that he apportioned for the Beis HaMikdash to alleviate the pain of the famine. And kind of like this money was like, it was like guilty money. And so he didn't want to use that to build the Beis HaMikdash. Another reason cited in the name of the Barbanel was that Shlomo's approach was that for whatever reason, and there are multiple reasons, David was not selected to build the Beis HaMikdash. And if he wasn't selected to build the Beis HaMikdash, maybe it meant he wasn't supposed to have a hand in the Beis HaMikdash, right? We had explained in Sefer Shmuel multiple reasons, right? The main reasons were either that David was too much of a man of war, and a man of war where there's bloodshed and building the house of God, where there's going to be a place for elongating the life of people. You can't have someone who, again, for good purpose, but because war is war, ended the life of people. So if that's the case, not only should David not take his hammer and nail and actually build it, but maybe he shouldn't even collect the funds. Similarly, the other main reason, which we discussed, which was that Hashem basically said, David is so dear to me. The totality of David is so dear to me that if he builds the Beis HaMikdash, I'm never going to be able to destroy it, and I'll take my anger out on the Jewish people, and that won't be good. Rather, let Shlomo build it, a little less of a relationship with Shlomo, and so I can destroy it. So maybe that applied to the actual, right? This is David's material. This is David's, you know. Again, but all these reasons are like, but here David spent all that time, you know, amassing this stuff, and it wasn't used. Okay, so you have to, life is complex. And, you know, maybe to some extent, some of this was, you have to imagine, you know, if this was a lot of gold and silver that was just in the storehouses, at some point it probably got used for upkeep for different functions. Fine. Pasuk Aleph in Parakas. Uz, almost like the Uz Yashir Moshe then. Mm-hmm. So after the full construction, everything's done, Uz Yakhael Shlomo as Zikne Yisrael. Shlomo Yakel, he gathered, right, like Vayakel, he gathered the elders of Israel, perhaps a reference to the Sanhedrin, the great court, Eskol Rashe Hamatos, all of the heads of the tribes, Nisiei Havos, the princes of the fathers of the families, Livnei Yisrael, of the Jewish people, he gathered them, El HaMelech Shlomo, to him, to the king, to Shlomo, to Yerushalayim, with the main function Lahalos as Aaron bris Hashem meir David hitzion, to bring up the ark which was representing the covenant of God from the city of David, which is also Tzion. The Tzion is a nickname for, at that point it was a nickname for Ir David. Ir David was the lower city. The Beis HaMikdash was part of what could be referred to as the upper city, which is why he's using the word Lahalos. David had saw fit to bring the Aron from where it had stayed for 20 years after it was captured from the Plishtim captured the Aron in a war. It soon, very soon came back and finally found a peaceful resting place in Kiryas Yearim, which is near the city of Telstone today. And it was after 20 years being there, David brought it to Yerushalayim, just to kind of solidify Yerushalayim as his capital, as the capital of the country. But it was in a tent, it was in a temporary place. So the completion of the Beis HaMikdash would be to take the Aron and place the Aron into its proper place, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Holy of Holies. So Ir David is referred to as Tzion. Tzion eventually also becomes a nickname for all of Yerushalayim, and technically a nickname for all of Eretz Yisrael, which is why that's where the term Zionist comes from. It's right. That's how we refer. Zion is referred to as, it can be one of anything. It could be all of Eretz Yisrael, it could be just Yerushalayim, and it could be just the Ir David slash the Makam HaMikdash, the place where the Beis HaMikdash was. So when does this take place? Pasuk Beis. Vayikalu el HaMelech Shlomo kol ish Yisrael. They gathered to the King Shlomo, apparently word spread, and instead of being just the Zekanim, just the Rashi Matos, just the Nesiim, the Tanakh tells us it's kol ish Yisrael. Everyone's on board. It's contagious. Everyone wants to be there. At the same time, everyone wants to be there because look when this is taking place. B'yerach Eitanim, it's taking place in the month of Eitanim, Bechag, in connection with the holiday of Sukkot, Huachodesh Hashvi, which is the seventh month. So it happens to be when Chag is mentioned, just Chag, Stam Chag is Sukkot. While we happen to use the word Chag Sameach, we use it for anything. We use it for Purim in Israel, right? They say Chag Purim Sameach. Then on Hanukkah they say Chag Urim Sameach, the holiday of lights. Then, you know, on Yom HaTzmaut people say Chag Sameach. So this means, you know, holiday, good holiday or happy holidays. But Chag generally refers to Sukkot. Chodesh Hashvi definitely informs of that. Chodesh Hashvi, if Nisan is the first month, Chodesh Harishon, so then, right, in Parshas Emor, we just had a couple of weeks ago in Parshas Shavua, all the holidays of Chodesh Hashvi, the seventh month. So, but what's this Yerach Eisanim? So, the Arch Girl translation translates Eisanim as Eisanim. That's, right, what translation do you have? Eisanim. So, that's not a translation. That's just what the word is in Hebrew. So the Metzudas Tzion defines the word Eitan as chozek, strength, or mighty. The Yerach Eisanim, it's the month of the mighty ones. Two motivations. Either it's the month that the Avos were born in, the months that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, even though Nisan is usually when we say that Yitzchak was born, but the month of the mighty ones, referring to our forefathers, or the month of mighty ones, it refers to the performance of mitzvahs. Out of all the months, the month that gets extra mitzvahs. You have Rosh Hashanah, you have Yom Kippur, you have Sukkot. It's like a lot going on, right? Half the speeches on Shavuos are like, wait, we come to Shavuos and there's no mitzvah, right? On this holiday, you have this mitzvah. And on Sukkot, we get two mitzvahs, right? We have the Sukkah, we have the Lulav. You come to Shavuos, we kind of have nothing. Okay, so what to talk about? That's why we have speeches on Shavuos. But Tishrei is a mighty month because there are more mitzvahs. So here's the big question: we already learned when the construction was completed. We had a pasuk in Perek Vav, pasuk Lamed Ches, that told us it was the 11th year, Biyerech Bol, Hu Hachodesh Hashmini, the month of Bol, which is the 8th month, which we call Cheshvan, Kala HaBayis, the Beis HaMikdash was finished, L'chol Dvarav, L'chol Mishpatav, Ve'ineh V'ineh U'Shavashanim, it was built over 7 years, it was totally done. Oh, he said 7 years, it was 7 years and 7 months, fine, it rounded it to a nice number. But it was finished in Cheshvan, and it was not inaugurated until Tishrei. What does that mean? 11-month delay. There was an 11-month delay. So what's going on? So there's a comment in the Medrash that Hashem wanted, and Shlomo wanted, to wait until this Yarach HaIsanim. There was a big deal to do it in Tishrei, specifically in this month of the Avos, of the patriarchs. In the end, you kind of have to say that this must have just been this was the plan. This was the divine plan to wait, have this time to wait. What's fascinating, this thought crossed my mind today, is that almost a little bit off the heels of what the Radak said on that Kriyuk Siv, that there's some connection back to Mishkan. So not as much time, but the same thing happened with the Mishkan. A very famous comment that we find in the writings about Hanukkah: why do we celebrate Hanukkah on the 25th day of Kislev? So it says, right, Chanu Chafei, they rested on the 25th, but that's the day they stopped fighting, so they rested. Another answer is that, no, since they were rededicating the Beis HaMikdash on that day, it happens to be in history, that's the day that the Mishkan was completed. That the construction of the Mishkan was completed on the 25th day of Kislev. However, we can see in the Torah, Vayehi Bayom HaShmini, it was on the 8th day, Parsha Shmini. What was Shmini? Shmini was the 8th day of the inauguration process, which corresponded to the first day of the first month, the first day of Nisan. The Mishkan was only inaugurated on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So here it was finished in Kislev, right? So it was finished, and then you had Kislev, then you have, right, Kislev, Teves, Shvat, Adar. They're 3 months. So why have it be 3 months? So the Medrash makes a similar comment about Nisan being the Chodesh and Nolad Bo Yitzchak, that Yitzchak was born, and Hashem wanted to wait for that. And I saw a beautiful explanation by the Mishkan, which maybe could be somehow adopted here, in that the Mishkan, according to many, was there to rectify the golden calf, the sin of the Egel Hazav. When you boil down the sin of the Egel Hazav, what was it? It was a sin of impatience. Moshe Rabbeinu said a certain time, the people got impatient, and they basically said, Judaism and connecting to God is so important, but we need to do it on our terms. And they were impatient about connecting to Hashem. So maybe that's the exact way to rectify the situation was to, right? They heard the Mishkan is going to be their way for tshuva, and the Mishkan finished. And these have an emedrash that says the people kept coming to Moshe, the Mishkan is finished, the Mishkan is finished, let's put it together. And Moshe said, slow down. You don't get to decide when to build the Mishkan. Hashem's going to decide when we should build the Mishkan. That you have to be, you had a sin of impatience, so you have to learn to be patient. And that said, so maybe there was a similar idea here, at least, even if you don't want to give, maybe I took it too far, but there was a similar idea of waiting. The same way the Mishkan was built, and yet it was waited to the appropriate time, so too, the Beis HaMikdash is built, and then it is inaugurated at the appropriate time.
So they didn't use it at all until it was inaugurated?
Right.
Really?
It didn't even have...
How do you know that they didn't use it?
That's the assumption. Because it didn't have sanctity yet.
Oh.
It is currently just a building.
Right.
Made with very expensive materials.
Right.
But until the presence of Hashem comes to... Similar to the Mishkan, that until the presence of Hashem comes to rest and kind of officially or divinely inaugurate this structure, it's just a structure, a magnificent structure, an impressive structure, but it's just a building. Almost to the same extent that, you know, the place where the Beis HaMikdash was retained its sanctity, but the items themselves don't necessarily retain their sanctity. That's why we mentioned this, that when we observe Tisha B'Av on the 9th of Av, but the Gemara mentions how the majority of the burning and the destruction happened on the 10th of Av. So maybe we should actually commemorate it on the 10th of Av, have the 9th of Av be Erev. Well, okay, it won't be called Tisha B'Av, it'll be called Asara B'Av, right? We said Asara B'Tavis, Asara B'Av. It'll be nice. It'll be easier for the kids to remember for their tests in school. 10, 10. Even though half the years it turns out to be the 10th anyway because of Shabbos. Like this year, again. Which, you know, sometimes makes things a little easier. If you have a bris, so the Moel, the Sandik, and the father of the baby don't have to fast. The mother already doesn't have to fast. But if it's a Sunday, if it's a pushed off Tisha B'Av, and a pushed off Tisha B'Av also, pregnant women and nursing women have much. It's like, I mean, talk to your. Talk, I don't know. I can't promise anything, but it's pretty. I just meant for objective truth.
Right.
Objective truth.
My girlfriend asked me questions about it, and I didn't
right.
say that.
Right. Objective.
Oh, it's your rabbi. I'm not asking on this.
Yeah, objective truth. So that the Beis HaMikdash itself was destroyed more on the 10th. So the answer is that once Hashem made the Gemara says this, once Hashem made the decision to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, that's what we mourned. The fire was burning wood and stones. Once Hashem removed his presence, so the structure itself kind of lost its sanctity, and therefore it was unfortunate, but it was wood and stones. The tragedy was more the final decision of Hashem to remove his sanctity. But from the place it was. So, I mean, you'll be the judge, not after today, but it definitely is going to appear that until this event of inaugurating it, it wasn't yet functioning. So Be'ez Hashem, next time we will continue.
Another question for you. You've had kids go to camps, don't you?
Yeah.
Did they, like,